With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is the worst decision you've ever made in your life?
I think I know Dave's.
It's Thursday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A with me, Adam Boltwood, Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV's best friend, Lawrence McKenna.
Oh, good to see you.
Statman Dave.
Oh, no, Fosu Mensah's injured.
Uh-oh. And, of course, Chris Henich. Chris, that's where you say hello. It's going smoothly so far. I love
wanted
it.
A dramatic entrance, I thought that.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us. We are here, of course, to talk about all the Premier League action, including the Manchester Derby, including the magic of Christian Eriksen, and the end for David Moyes, question mark. Well, in part two, we're going to get to your questions, where we're going to tackle the Joey Barton gambling controversy, what the hell is going on at Newcastle and West Ham and their running with the HMRC, as well as talking our manager of the year. So much good stuff to look forward to. Before that, though, it's time for Hole of the Week. Dave, could you give me a little jingle, a little musical intro while I bring up the review?
Jingle bell, Hole of the Week. Hole of the Week. Hole of the Week. Jingle bell, Hole of the Week. Hole of the Week.
Blonde.
Wow. Quite something. The Hole of the Week this week is no one, guys, because there have been no new reviews left on the Front Three on iTunes. It's almost like you don't want that box of Ferrero Rocher, guys, that is given to the Hole of the Week each week. It's so easy. All you have to do is click on the link in the description of this podcast, rate and review the Front Three, preferably with 5 stars, and you could be in the chance of being Hole of the Week and winning those chocolates.
I am a massive fan. I'm a massive fan of the Frank Ocean album, Blonde.
Yeah, we all are. We all are. Dave, are you a fan of that album yourself?
Never heard it, mate.
Never heard it.
Wow. Should probably get listening to it. Guys, let's talk the Manchester Derby, the thrilling Manchester Derby. Joining us to do so is friend of the show, Nico Morales. Nico, welcome to the Front Three. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Thanks, thanks, Adam. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Talk to me, Nico, because I missed this game. Fortunately, it would seem, because people are up in arms about how just incredibly dull this game was. Is that a fair assessment, Nico?
I don't think so. I think it was pretty interesting from a tactical standpoint, as I think Dave and I will attest to. I think there was a lot at play here, but really, I think Manchester City, once again, against a top team in the Premier League, can count themselves a little bit unlucky to not be at least one or two goals up within that game.
I think it was an interesting game. I think United sat back and countered quite well. I quite liked how United attacked City down the flanks in the first half, but in the second half, it just wasn't there. I think Mkhitaryan started off as playing a false nine for the first maybe 10 minutes, and it worked really well. Like, City didn't know what to do, didn't know whether to follow him. He was dropping back and creating a diamond in midfield, and then Mourinho just switched it and put Rashford through the middle, which worked for the first half because City weren't really pressurising United in midfield and they had space to play the balls to him. But as soon as City started to dominate, there was no link between United's midfield and their attack. And I really think if he pushed Mkhitaryan through the middle again in that second half, could have opened a lot of angles for United to break, because Rashford was consistently causing them problems. Anthony Martial, Zabaleta didn't know what to do with him. Completing the first half, he completed 5 dribbles, which was 2 fewer than the entire City team managed combined. But in the second half, he only completed 1 and only attempted 2. So it went from 6 to 2. So it's one of those things where potentially players were underutilized in this system. Obviously, Paul Pogba is a massive miss for Manchester United, the link between the midfield and attack. Marouane Fellaini played well for me until the red card, but he's not as good on the ball. He's very square, he's very backward, which opens up United for the City press, which they did quite well. And United were stupid to play into City's hands in that respect.
Stupid.
Silly.
Does that make Jose Mourinho stupid, Dave?
No, I just think it's some of the players, just the decision-making at this level is there's a little bit to be desired, to be quite honest. And I blame Mourinho for not trying Mickey through the middle again. I think that was one thing he could have done. But it's just some of these players just don't. They're a little bit rash on the ball when they need to be a little bit calmer, and that kind of broke United's attack in that second half.
Mm. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine playing down the middle line. Hey, Mickey.
Harman Sandu rang in. Did United's woeful midfield performance finally show Pogba's worth to the team? He brings control and he's able to feed attackers on a similar theme. The Shining Ocean said, will people finally acknowledge that Paul Pogba has been vital this season?
No, it's just something that, as someone that watches United week in, week out, as anyone that watches United week in, out, you know that Paul Pogba is so vitally important to this team and this attack, and he's, still a very, very young player. So it's not a surprise, it really isn't. But I didn't think he played too bad. I thought Ander Herrera was absolutely boss in central midfield once again. He always is. But he just, his game by numbers just shows, he's shooting, he's clearing, he's intercepting, he's blocking, he's making tackles. He made 12 tackles, 6 blocks. He's a central midfielder. Showed his performance again, and got on the elbow, got on the wrong side of a Fernandinho push to the face again. Nico probably should have been sent off, right?
Definitely not. But I think you make some interesting points there with talking about how United countered extremely well with a total of 3 shots, 1 on target, countered pretty well there. But I think Ander Herrera probably didn't have the best central midfield performance, especially in comparison to his last performance in the league against Chelsea. I think if someone like as old as Yaya Toure is kind of showing you up in the central midfield department, you kind of need to have a look at yourself. But
it was actually on the other side of the pitch, Nico. It was Marouane Fellaini's man, and I thought Marouane Fellaini dominated him with that big afro.
He dominated, yeah. No, I think
in the last 10 minutes he didn't.
I think I think United set up well defensively to counter Pep's favored sort of positional play, sort of a 5-4-1 in defense at times to counteract the positioning of forwards in half spaces. So I thought it was a pretty good defensive performance overall from Manchester United, and I thought they did some things very well. But City finished a few chances there that could go in on any other day, and we're talking about a different result.
Mm. A win would have pretty much guaranteed a top 4 finish for Manchester City, though, Nico. Not to be as it stands. I mean, are you sweating a little bit on that top 4 finish? Are you feeling confident?
Yeah, I feel pretty confident that City will be able to finish within the top 4. I think they have every capability to go forward and secure the rest of the games and secure the wins that they need to be in the top 4 and finish. I think they'll finish 3rd, and probably Liverpool will be the ones to drop out of the top 4 if a team are going to drop out of the top 4. It's a huge positive now that it was unclear whether Gabriel Jesus, to the extent of his injury, seeing him come back in this game and be such an effect just so early on, scoring that offside goal, is going to be a huge plus for Manchester City against really any opposition that they come up against. So
all those offside goals could really make a huge difference between now and
yeah.
I felt really sorry.
How's Liverpool doing with Palace earlier this?
So many snipes flying around. Just go straight now. Nico, if Manchester City do finish 3rd, what would be your assessment of Guardiola's first season at the club? Because, we were talking about this on Monday. Being knocked out of the FA Cup ended any chance for silverware this season, meaning it is effectively Guardiola's worst season as a manager. How would you sort of evaluate how he's done in the Premier League?
I think there's a lot of things to be accounted for. There's a lot of mistakes that Guardiola made and decisions that he could have made differently that probably could have affected Manchester City season in a more positive way. Specifically, some of the decisions that he made against Arsenal. I think he's largely at fault for the result there, and City could have been in an FA Cup final, which would have been a huge positive, for our season going forward, and really the season as a whole. But I think there's a lot of moving pieces that affected Guardiola's first season, and you know, although I think it can definitely be classified as a bit of a disappointment, there's a lot to be positive about going forward. You know, there were some huge misses this season. You know, Gabriel Jesus had a flying start, and then he was out injured. Ilkay Gundogan was such a key member of that entire system and formation that Guardiola wanted to play, and him to miss the entire year is such a critical part. You know, someone like Yaya Toure, being as old as he is, playing as much as he does, is really sort of a telling a telling factor as to both what Pep needs in a central midfielder and also how poorly the club have done to replace some of those aging stars like Toure and Silva and Zabaleta and some of those other players that are seeing a lot of minutes this season.
Point potentially good result for Manchester United, Dave. I mean, they're only a point behind City now, two behind Liverpool with a game in hand, of course. Marouane Fellaini, though. Could he be a big miss? I mean, the question coming in from Run It Like Rashford on Twitter, him missing the next three games, is it a blessing in disguise, is what he's asking, Dave.
I don't think so. He's been all right this season. He's, you know, he plays his role well when he's assigned a certain role, you know, and he did quite well against City, but I think it's just the injuries as well stacking up in central midfield, where Wayne Rooney's going to make an appearance again. With, you know, Fosu Mensah out injured, it's getting really thin. You know, is Tuanzebe going to play central midfield? Is Luke Shaw going to have a go in there? Valencia back? I don't know. Daily Blind, maybe? That could be quite interesting. But I think, you know, the injuries are racking up for Manchester United and is a little bit of a worry.
Let's move on, shall we? Nico, you want to stick around for the rest of the podcast?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I like it. You've got nothing to do for an hour or so. Just join us. Oh, why not?
Okay. Brilliant.
Let's talk about Tottenham. Brave Tottenham. Going away to Crystal Palace, but securing hard-earned 3 points, Lawrence. It was a must-win game, you know. Spurs coming off that disappointing exit in the FA Cup semi-final at the weekend at the hand of Chelsea. People were doubting them, you know. They were saying, do they have the mentality to win this game against the genius that is Big Sam? And yet, they did, Lawrence. And they're in the hunt for the title. Did you manage to catch this one, Lawrence? I mean, from an outside perspective, what did you make of this one?
I mean, it's one of those performances most people retrospectively get this one out of the way. Most people retrospectively will say, oh, that was a title winning performance, wasn't it? Ooh. They ground out that 1-0.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Because of the way that I think he also set out the team. I was actually really, to be honest, I was less impressed with Palace, and I thought Palace could have made more of the resources. In many ways, I think Pochettino's become very good at cancelling out other teams in the league, even better than he was earlier on in the season. And I think when two teams who are very good at cancelling the other outplay each other, this is probably the result that you get. It was a great moment from Christian Eriksen, and he did very well. I think the biggest concern for Palace fans are going to be the loss of Mamadou Sakho, and possibly that's the same for Liverpool fans. And also the fact that Christian Benteke was subbed off late for Fraser Campbell. So
it's quite a switch. Quite a switch there.
Quite the switch.
Yeah. It was a good win, though. I think it was interesting how, you know, Wanyama was withdrawn at halftime because he was already yellow. Maybe he should have seen red in that first half. Moussa Dembele also coming off.
And Dele Alli.
Dele Alli came off later on. But yeah. At halftime, withdrawing Dembele and Wanyama, I was a bit worried. I thought, you know, all the power and presence was going to be missing in midfield after that. Maybe Palace would be able to exert themselves again, as they had done in the opening period. But Christian Eriksen shifted back to midfield, controlled the play after that.
Why do you think they did sub Dele Alli so late? Because do you think that was just a time-wasting thing?
Yeah, I think it was, what, the 93rd minute?
It was 96th minute, mate. Yeah, of course. 96th minute, yeah.
Trying to run down the clock, I think, at that point, you know. It was 7 minutes of injury time. You've got to try and run down the clock as best you can.
Keep running,
But, I mean, you mentioned that goal from Christian Eriksen. I thought, overall, his performance was superb. As I'm saying, he moved deeper into midfield when Wanyama and Dembele were withdrawn. He was playing alongside Eric Dier, and he controlled the game after that. I think, you know, he has been a frustrating player in the past at Tottenham, but he's added consistency to his game now, which has, you know, seen his contribution increase. You know, I think it's 5 goals and 11 assists in 13 games in 2017, so it's been valuable in our run this year. It's 8 games in a row now that we've won in the league.
I was very impressed with how Milivojevic managed to shut that midfield down for Spurs.
Well, apart from the crucial moment when Christian
Harris know what I mean.
But title race is back on, Lawrence, once again.
Is it?
No, the title race is over. I don't like this.
Either way, mate, I'm not going to be upset either way. We've made a documentary about both of them, so whoever you want to back.
That's the important thing.
That's the important thing. We've documented
Dave,
both.
In that opening sort of 20 minutes, half an hour, when Palace looked dangerous and looked lively, most of the source of that was from one player, Wilfried Zaha, I thought. Looked very good, looked very dangerous on the pitch. Of course, maybe an audition for Spurs last night. Talk of the club signing him. Of course, they made a £21 million bid last summer. Allardyce after the match saying, you know, this guy is now worth as much as £40 million. I mean, that's a bargain, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, an absolute bargain.
Yeah. Do you think he's worth that rather large price tag?
Absolutely not. £40 million for Wilfried Zaha. When players like Nicolas Schüle are going to buy Munich for €25 million.
It's a joke, mate. The market's gone
mad. You've
got
to be joking.
Do you not rate him as a player, Dave? You know, former Manchester United star.
I think he lacks intelligence. I think he's a Europa League player. I think that's his peak. If you want to have a Europa League player, then that's fine.
Perfect.
I don't think he's got that extra killer instinct. I don't think he has the nous to play in a proper rigid tactical system, which, again, maybe the making of him at Spurs, whether he can play Pochettino's way, because arguably he can't. You know, he didn't make it under Louis van Gaal, who had a similar pressing system and pressing scheme. So it's one of these things where he suits where he is. He suits playing for a smaller team where he can counter-attack with a space for him to break in. He doesn't suit playing for a Spurs where it's playing against a deep block type week in, week out. He's a perfect player for Liverpool, another player that's not going to be able to break a deep block.
Van Gaal's also notorious for limiting creative freedom as well, which I don't think Pochettino is. I mean, so it's all well and good saying that he failed at Man United in a pressing system, I get that, but that was one facet of a much larger game plan that didn't suit Zaha at all, and he wasn't given a huge chance either.
But I think the more important thing is dealing with defences that sit deep, and when he plays for Palace, when they sit deep, he's allowed to counter-attack into space that Spurs, Liverpool, whoever will afford him, at Manchester United, at Tottenham, teams are evidently going to sit deeper, thus he won't have much space to run into and accelerate and so forth. I think that's
but he's good in one-on-ones, though. He's a good dribbler. But then he's not a kick-and-run kind of guy either. He's got some tricks.
The problem with Wilfried Zaha is his decision-making. When he beats one man, he goes to take on another man. If you're doing that against someone that's sitting deep, they're just going to get numbers back. The central midfielder will come over, the left midfielder will be there, the left back will be there, and Zaha will be just running into a cul-de-sac. And I think that was ultimately his problem, is his decision-making at that point in the final third.
It's an interesting
and for Spurs, it assessment. Needs to be smart.
I think you've dampened my enthusiasm a little bit, Dave. Interesting sort of comparison between the styles, almost.
I always thought it was a little bit of a weird one because, I mean, I'm sort of caught between what Kristen's saying and what Dave's saying. You know, I do think Wilfried Zaha was there for a reason. Maybe, I mean, it's unusual. Maybe he has sort of found his level at Palace. A lot of people think that he could go further. He's sort of at a make or break point now. I think he's, I know he was 23 not so long ago, so he might be 24 now, but he's sort of at a break point in his career now. I think he needs a manager who's going to shape him, and I worry a little bit that if it is Sam Allardyce, then he might shape him into a player who can no longer take that jump to another level, and I would love to see a manager like Pochettino get his hands on him and maybe try. It seems early on like it was actually quite damaging for Zaha to go and sit
definitely.
under such a terrible, tyrannical regime as Manchester United's David Moyes.
I think he would be a very good option, I suppose. We need to add quality, we need to add depth to our squad next season. I think someone like Zaha, be it starting, be it coming off the bench, would be a fantastic option. But we remains to be seen whether he does move. £40 million is a lot of money, of course. Spurs have also been linked with Douglas Costa, who might be that sort of price tag. So be interesting to see if the club weigh it up and which way they go with that. For now, though, Spurs are second. Of course, this weekend is the North London Derby against an Arsenal side coming off morale-boosting back-to-back wins, not only in the FA Cup semi-final at the weekend, but now in the league with a somewhat fortunate victory over Leicester. Some doubt, though, as to whether Alexis Sanchez is going to be fit for this game, Nico. He's struggling to shrug off a lip injury, is what I've heard. He apparently suffered a rather nasty impact there.
A lip injury, that's a very interesting one. But I think, you know, I actually recorded a podcast with a Tottenham fan earlier today, and just to get the...
How horrible for you.
just to get the sort of mood before the North London Derby. I think this is one that a lot of Spurs fans are excited for, considering the progress of the club and how consistent they have been in sort of moving in an upward direction, as opposed to, you know, the consistency that they've held in the past as sort of being the perennial side outside of the top six. So I think a lot of Tottenham fans should be able to look forward to this game and say, you know, that they have the upper hand. It's just really up to Pochettino in terms of the tactics that he chooses to employ as to how they'll do on the day.
If Spurs win this game, they will officially finish above Arsenal for the first time in 22 God, years.
That'd be so good. Wouldn't big that stakes. Be such a good way to get there?
Mauricio Pochettino talking after the Palace game, you know, our aim should be bigger. We're looking upwards towards the league title. We're not looking at this sort of thing. But I think for Spurs fans, it is a big marker. It is a big milestone to do that.
Imagine Arsenal fan TV on that night.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting. I'm feeling confident, but at the same time, you know, there's always a worry at the back of your mind with Spurs that, you know, losing this one to Arsenal, the confidence could take hit. Having said that, I mean, Dave, how do you think Wenger should set up against Spurs to get the best result? Sticking with that back three?
Yeah, I think so. I think if Spurs are playing a back three, I think you should match it. I think that's one of the ways to do it. I think if Chelsea lost to Spurs around January time, when they both played the same system and Spurs played it a little bit more narrow than Chelsea did, and that kind of played into Spurs' hands. It's played into them holding the ball, retaining possession in the better areas, the likes of Eriksen and Dele Alli floating in that zone. The interesting part about Arsenal is they'll play it in the same way. So it'll be a real contrast of exactly the same system, where it will be this narrow front three, or there's probably, you know, the striker and the two attacking midfielders in behind. So it will be a real battle of the fullbacks. And considering that Oxlade-Chamberlain's been in good form with the ball in that situation, could be a really interesting moment if, obviously, Danny Rose is still out injured, right? So it's not going to be Son after his performance against Chelsea. Would it be Ben Davis? Ben Davis versus Chamberlain. I'm probably going to go with Chamberlain winning that. So it's going to be a massive battle of the wingbacks, because I think all over the pitch, they'll just be cancelling each other out with the pressing. It'll be quite an aggressive battle. And if Arsenal can win the battle down the flanks, that's where the game's won.
I'd like to point out that I think Alexis Sanchez is going to be fine. I was trying to do a banter. Was it the ball thrown in his face that actually gave him the busted lip, or was it he got
didn't
clad?
That happen to you today, Boltwood?
It did, mate. It did. It did indeed. I know just how Alexis Sanchez feels. Got the ball pelted at me from either side.
He's played through a lot more, though, in the past. Like, he's literally played through groin injuries and calf injuries. No, so a lip injury wouldn't do much. You know?
I think that's at least three months on the sideline.
I love all those rugby dickheads who come out all the time and go, well, who rolls around on the floor when they get something, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, mate, leave it out.
I think Alexis Sanchez was having a bit of fun as well. People are like, oh, it's pathetic. Alexis Sanchez, look at, you know, trying to get sympathy for swollen lip. I think he's having a little bit of fun with it, personally. Anyway, let's move swiftly on from predicting Spurs to comfortably win the North London Derby to Sunderland, Chris. Middlesbrough beating the Black Cats 1-0 last night. It was their first win of 2017, leaving David Moyes' side on the brink of relegation. The end of Sunderland in the Premier League, by the looks of it, Dave. By the looks of it, Chris. But is it the end of David Moyes? The fans seem to have well and truly turned on him. It's got so bad, they're even chanting Roy Keane's name in the stands.
I think they've been against him for a while, and I understand why, because he's a really poor coach. I think he's not very expansive. He's also pretty useless when it comes to media handling. And they're in for a difficult season in the Championship, presuming they go down. And I don't think he inspires anyone. So it's really not what they want. And I can understand why, because they've seen their great rivals go down. And the one thing that I think helped Newcastle through some difficult periods of this season was the fact everyone kind of clubbed together behind Benitez and the players. At the minute, there's actually, I would say, quite a strong separation between fans and players and staff at the minute, because maybe bar Jermaine Defoe and Pickford, there's not many really well-liked from what I can see and read. They didn't play very well against Middlesbrough, and when you consider the derbies, I know it's not the derby for Sunderland fans, but a derby is usually where they manage to raise their game a bit and perform, and they were just poor. Middlesbrough weren't massively better. I think both will go down realistically. But the truth of the situation for Sunderland is doesn't seem like they have a huge plan in place at the minute, which I don't think the thing is, I don't think it takes a massive amount of soul searching to devise something that could help them next season. It's just whether they actually choose to do it.
Brad Usher asking on Twitter, could Moyes bring Sunderland up on the first time of asking? If not, who should they appoint? Any ideas, Chris?
No, I don't think Moyes can, first and foremost. I don't think he is comfortable taking the game to a team. And if you want to go up, especially because Sunderland next season will be a little bit of a scalp when the season starts. I mean, that will fluctuate depending on how they do. As for who to get, I was talking, funnily enough, I was talking to someone at Sunderland today, and I said whichever one of Fulham or Huddersfield doesn't go up, pretty much throw money at them. But if I had a choice, I'd probably go for Wagner, because I think Jokanović's style with Fulham is brilliant to watch. It's absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if that squad is very well built as it stands to facilitate that kind of football, even more so when the players come out. Whereas Wagner's is kind of rooted in being organised, being quite athletic and bullish, and I think that fits the group of players there.
All positive stuff at Sunderland. Finally, in the Premier League this midweek, Chelsea beating Southampton 4-2 at Stamford Bridge. Comfortable win, Lawrence. Chelsea march on, etc., etc. Diego Costa finding form at the right time, though, would be a perfect way for him to potentially sign off at the club, rediscovering his scoring touch and firing them to the Premier League title.
And increasing that fee to China.
Ooh, I mean, slap more on it. They can pay 60, 70, surely.
Yeah, I guess the question is, who do you get to replace him?
Not a bad question.
Morata?
Potentially. Dave, I mean, we were talking about this earlier. Is there anyone you think potentially alongside Alvaro
Morata? Did you two see each other earlier?
Oh, yeah, we saw each other earlier. Dave, what do you reckon? Potential striker replacement for Diego Costa?
Morata could be a really interesting proposition in the Premier League. He's got it all, got all the raw materials, very, you know, good in the air, very, very quick, strong, physical, can finish. He scored the joint most non-goals from the penalty spot at Real Madrid this season. You know, if discount penalties, he's joint with Ronaldo on 13 goals in La Liga, considering he's only played just over 1,000 minutes. He's been pretty insane. He's sort of he leads the line of the Real Madrid B team, as I like to call them. You know, when Zidane wants to rotate his side, you know, he's Deportivo La Coruña. They played last night, beat them 6-2. Another fantastic performance from Isco. Isco's the guy that you want to get, to be quite honest, out of this Real Madrid B team. He's the one that's making everything tick. You know, James Rodriguez is a top, top quality player. And will, you know, his next move's going to be a fantastic player. But Isco kind of is the guy that Real Madrid shouldn't lose. I think James is expendable, but if they lose Isco, that's a big, big mistake. So if I were Chelsea, I'd go for, if they're going to lose Costa, if they're going to lose Hazard, I'd go for Isco and Morata. That's a perfect combination, potentially with Conte going to maybe a 3-5-2. Could really work out. So it's one of these things where I think it's all about evaluating what Chelsea want to do next season, how they want to set up.
4-2-4.
Nico, do you want to speculate as to any potential targets Chelsea should be looking at with their potential 60 million windfall coming in for Diego Costa?
I think it'd be, I don't know if the player would be keen to it, but Lukaku would certainly be an adequate replacement for Diego Costa, if not a better one. It's just as to whether the player would want to revisit that part of his past.
Apparently he does. Apparently he does.
And I think that there really are only two clubs, both with the opening, I guess, within their first team and the monetary ability to afford someone like him. But, you know, giving Batshuayi's performance in the FA Cup against Tottenham, he was pretty good. So I just couldn't understand why you wouldn't want to promote someone like him from I guess, your reserve sides.
The hope for Spurs fans up and down the country, Chris, is that Chelsea have conceded in their last 11 games. They haven't kept a clean sheet since January. I mean, speaking of Lukaku, do you think maybe Chelsea could drop points at Everton on Sunday? All going well, Spurs win in the North London derby. The gap is 1 point, Chris. Is it going to happen?
That's a lot of stars aligning.
A lot of hypotheticals there, I agree.
Yeah, it is. That's... I feel so bad for Spurs in a lot of ways, because I sometimes feel as if they're held to an unfair standard, because if they lose at the weekend, I think everyone will turn around and say, so that's typical Spurs. And it's really not a fair reflection on the season that I think they've had. Whether Chelsea can lose at Everton, it's difficult, because I think think Lukaku matches up really well against their centre-backs. I think if he was to get up against David Luiz, it's the kind of matchup where Luiz will make mistakes, in my opinion. As for the rest of things, they're a little bit flighty for me, Everton. That's, I never feel confident predicting their games at the minute, because they're not as good away from home as they are at home. I think that's the positive I'm trying to take if I'm a Spurs fan looking at this. I think they are a much better side at home. And for that reason, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say your perfect weekend happens then.
1 point. The gap's going to be 1 point. That would be that'd be good. Confirming that we're going to finish with Arsenal. 1 point in the table. Oh, sensational. I think it's an interesting point you raised, though, because Spurs now have already achieved their record. Spurs have already achieved their record points tally in the Premier League. With what, 5 games to go, so I think that in of itself
stop
is a fantastic
now,
achievement.
Stop now,
but I think you know
it means that next season you can break it again.
Yeah, but you know I think that is a great achievement, and I think Spurs have, is it the 5th or 6th highest wage bill in the Premier League, so that they are punching above their weight. So I think it's viewed for a prism, like you say, Chris, of if they lose, oh, their mentality has always been weak. It's very Spursy of them. I was sort of getting those vibes in the first half when, you know, things weren't going Spurs' way against Palace. They started slowly. I'm not sure it's 100% fair assessment. I think the lens through which we're viewing Spurs this season is slightly skewed. It's been a tremendous season. But if they cut it down to 1 point.
I do think Eriksen is so central to things at the minute, though.
Yeah.
I know. And I think you can get caught in the trap of saying, well, this person's a talisman and this person's a talisman. What I've noticed with Eriksen is this season, I think he's almost shifted up a gear. He's always been a really brilliant player.
Oh,
David Priest, who's a must follow on Twitter, wrote a really good piece about him, because he was actually with Eriksen at Odense in Denmark. And he talked about how precocious he was even then, kind of making an absolute mug out of David, which I thought was very honest of him to write about. But the thing with Eriksen is he just seems to make them tick. And I think it's one of those things where you really have to study what he does, because not everything will be that goal from 35 yards. But I guarantee everything will be a positive action. And if you look at the game against Chelsea where they lost, I think part of the reason they did was because Eriksen was knocked off a little bit. I think he got ruffled a little bit physically, because he's obviously not made for that kind of game. And I think once he lost his head a little bit, I think Spurs kind of started to crack and creak a little bit because of it.
No, I 100% agree. Like I say, he's added consistency to his game this season. And when you look at Eriksen, as you say, he doesn't always get the assist or goals, which, although he is doing that in 2017, you know, he has become one of Spurs' most vital players. He's always playing the pass before the goal, almost. He's always vital in the build-up to Spurs' attack and play. But enough of Spurs, enough of Eriksen, enough of the Premier League. Let's move on to my favourite part of the show. It's time for the questions, and there are some good ones.
And there are some...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Questions. Atención.
Atención. Atención.
good questions.
Right.
Let's start off with the best question this week. We might have to revisit it later on. Just maybe get the juices flowing, start thinking about this one. Carlos Zaldivar went straight in there. Next level question. This is kind of deep, but what is the worst decision you've ever made in your life?
Ooh, I think I know Dave's.
Very good. Dave's spoken for. We'll come back to the rest of you at the end of the episode. Moving swiftly on. Joe Hampton.
I think it's going to look good.
We'll come on to that. Joe Hampton writes in. He says, what are your thoughts on the Joey Barton situation? Of course, in the reference to yesterday's slow news day, Joey Barton yesterday being suspended by the Football Association for 18 months on betting charges, the 34-year-old accepting the charges that accused him of having placed 1,260 bets on football matches between 2006 and 2013, including at least five matches in which he was a player. In light of the ban, you know, Barton's come out, he sort of disputed the severity of the punishment, which he says is likely to end his career being the age that he is. He's going to launch an appeal, reportedly. But it has, Lawrence, sort of brought up this whole conversation about the wider involvement of gambling and its relationship with the football industry. You know, some are seeing this ban and the severity of it as hypocritical, you know, given the link between football and the gambling industry. Barton himself came out and sort of said, you know, I think if the FA is truly serious about tackling the culture of gambling in football, it needs to take a look at its own dependence on the gambling companies, their role in football and in sports broadcasting, rather than just blaming the players who place a bet. You know, he himself saying he's fought a gambling addiction during the period in question. Obviously, very interesting topic of debate. No easy answers. Some are sort of accusing Joey Barton of absolving himself of responsibility in his response to the punishment. I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole situation, Lawrence?
I mean, it's very difficult to how you frame an addict in the first place, because, you know, I think the term's laced with a lot of heavy ideas that come with it, and so I think there's been a lot of maneuvering behind the scenes to move Barton into a place where he can do this, and you know, looking at using him as a figurehead for the game. I know a lot of people behind the scenes, whether he's a very popular figure sort of in front of the camera on the pitch. I think a lot of people behind the scenes appreciate the times when Barton has acknowledged his own failings and sort of been one of the very sort of human, relatable players and helped some people with their own problems. So I don't think he's the terrible bad guy that everyone maybe wants him to play. Maybe the problem with Joey is that he puts himself at the middle of all of these things. And so the problem is, it's not so much whether he's good or bad, but it's that he almost has to be the center of attention on it. And that, I think, comes across maybe in a bad way. But then that's just one hot take. Overall, morally, it's probably possible to gamble and, you know, gamble responsibly. You know, as a lot of people say, you know, that there's a very fine line between gambling responsibly and, you know, the fine line tends to be whether you are making money or not. For that reason, you'd say there's probably that, you know, it's too difficult to sort of have a point where someone can gamble well or not. You know, if you're gambling, you're probably going to lose some money, you're probably going to win some money.
This is the thing.
The issue is that, though. It's the problem that he's in the game. I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the point is with him is that he bet against, he bet against his own teammates not to score the first goal. He bet against his situations that he could influence the outcome of.
I think definitely you can as a standalone statement say Joey Barton has a problem with gambling. I think alongside that, you can also say that the punishment he has received for doing that over 1,200 times is just. As much as it might pain him that his career is now over,
yeah.
And I think the thing with betting and football specifically, and people saying, well, this is a massive problem now, it's really not. The rules are very clear. They're very obvious. And if Barton had been done on some kind of, well, actually, you're not allowed to bet on horse racing or anything, then I could sort of understand if he'd been done on something that wasn't obvious and clear to all involved, but it really isn't. And I don't think any player with common sense would do that. That's the problem I have with Barton, is I think he speaks very well, but I don't think he's intelligent. There's a key difference.
I think he doesn't practice what he preaches very often, and that's the big problem with Joey, is that he seems to want to be someone who's part of the public discourse, and yet doesn't seem to understand what it takes to be able to do that very often. And it's quite sad, because I think a lot of people do see someone. Actually, no, I don't see someone I particularly want to hear from. But some people do, and some people see him as that relatable figure. And I think a lot of people feel the loss of what maybe Joey Barton could have been for some people. And he isn't that figure, and we should stop treating him as that figure, because I think in many ways it plays into the overall theatre that enables some of these actions that then goes on. But that's, again, something that maybe comes across as judgmental. But the point is that he bet ridiculously, and first of all, ridiculously badly, but also ridiculously in the sense that he sort of bet in games that he was involved in. It's not like it sort of goes, am I involved with that one? Probably. Yeah. That's awkward. Dave, what has he bet?
I think he bet on when he was playing at Manchester City for Georgie Samaras to score first when he was in the game. I think he also put money on himself to score first. But it was only like a couple of quid or something like that.
It's bet over 400 quid on, it was when he was playing for Newcastle on an FA Cup tie, Newcastle versus Stevenage. He bet on for Newcastle to win and they lost 3-1, which is pretty funny.
That is...
I think
he did score the consolation goal, though.
Thankfully.
I think it's interesting. I think you make some really good points there, Lawrence. You as well, Chris, in terms of how Joey Barton's sort of reputation almost informs the way we view this whole issue. But I think...
There is a headline tonight on The Guardian that says experts warn of 12.6 billion scale of UK gambling problem.
That's so the thing. I think it's interesting it's brought up this debate.
But again, the problem is it's sort of framed in the Barton light, and I'm not quite sure that I appreciate that as a framing. I understand that you need like a figurehead or someone that's going to attract those clicks, but
I feel and I hope it's almost this is what's brought it to light almost, but now it's sort of separate from Barton now, because as Chris is saying, you know, he should accept responsibility for betting on his own games. Obviously, that's an incredibly foolish thing to do, but now it's sort of talking about the wider problem of gambling in football. I mean, there's been calls for the Scottish FA to look at their links to the gambling industry. I think there's positive things coming out of it, albeit Joey Barton's the source, which is probably never a good thing, but it's it could potentially have some positive outcomes, which, you know, should be interesting to see.
I think he could become somewhat of a Lance Armstrong figure in the industry if he's careful or not careful.
Maybe a
figure that some people will grow to resent.
I think he's already there.
And if he does try and work his way back into the game, I think there's a lot of politicking behind this which we don't get to see. And this is sort of, this feels to me more like a tip of an iceberg than something which we've, you know, has been grossly uncovered and everyone can sort of look at, because there's very little real coverage of this.
He's going to develop, we'll be hearing more about it.
Can we also ultimately acknowledge he's screwed a lot of people out of money as well in that, and, you know, maybe has tried to influence the results of games where he needs to... there will have been regular people betting on these games where Joey's thought process will have been different purely because of his own benefit in those games.
Oh, no, definitely. Speaking of screwing people out of money, Newcastle United and West Ham United on Wednesday were at the centre of a controversy of their own, Chris. Jamie says, what is going on with these two clubs? Ah, as he eloquently puts it. it's the only explanation. HMRC raided the stadium offices of both clubs on Wednesday, arrested Lee Charnley, the Newcastle managing director. Sylvain Marveaux, the former Newcastle player, was also arrested and questioned by French law enforcement officers in connection with the same investigation with regards to suspected tax and national insurance fraud. France's national financial Office revealing in a statement that the UK authorities suspect hidden payments to certain players, their agents, or third parties, allowing them to evade income taxes and social security contributions. Murky business, Chris. We're not quite sure 100% what's going on yet. It's obviously very early in this story.
So let's guess.
Yeah, so let's wildly speculate. This is what we. That's the information we know.
It's certainly unsettling. I think I say that firmly with my fan hat on. If I'm truthful, I can't speak massively to West Ham. I think Chelsea are involved at all, or at least they said they were helping with inquiries. Which Newcastle have since said they were doing too. It's funny because there was a list of how much each club was spending on agents, and Newcastle's was firmly low, or fairly low, excuse me. And I'm starting to wonder now, retrospectively, if there was a reason it was fairly low. I think it's pretty murky. Because there's a lot of potential speculation about what this will mean in terms of point deductions, relegations, demotions, all that kind of stuff. I have a sneaking suspicion that one of the arguments presented may be that Mike Ashley was not directly involved and had appointed people such as Lee Charney to oversee these things. And so while ignorance, I believe, is not mitigation in court, it may see the people who were orchestrating these alleged acts punished more than the football club or Mike Ashley. The one thing that is, I think, guaranteed as fact, though, is that this will take a long time to reach a conclusion. This is not something that is likely to have a finish point in the near future.
Very interesting indeed. Also very interesting, Herman Sandu says, what are Lawrence's thoughts on Robbie's comments on the Long Ball Street podcast? I'm sure he has heard them. Now, I'm not 100% sure what he's referencing here, Lawrence. Are you?
It's not anything new. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people in the industry about this, and I spoke about it with Hugh Wizzy on the True Geordie podcast. There's not very much more to say than I think, fan channels are not at a turning point, but they need to move themselves forward and evolve. And, I don't think I was very personal in my comments.
But Robbie disagreeing with that point of view? Or?
I don't really know what Robbie was. It was kind of hard to work out what Robbie was actually saying. It was just more that Robbie. So it seems like Robbie's stance is if you're not doing it, then you can't comment on it. And if you don't go to every match, then you can't comment on it. I'm sure that's a ridiculous perspective even then that he would probably refute. But out of respect to Robbie and a few other people, I'm just going to say I've asked some perfectly legitimate questions and they still don't get answered. And I think most of the time people talk about collaboration on YouTube and they talk about being open and it being a platform where you see everything and you let everything hang out. But the second that we question those things, or the second that we wonder whether that is the truth, I think a lot of people are found wanting.
Mm. It's an interesting one. I'm going to have to listen to both the Long Ball Street podcast and True Geordie.
If I may,
you're in for a very long 3 hours, then, mate. Mm.
If I may briefly, I think one of the issues here with fan channels, period, is they have arrived onto the media landscape in a way that is entirely self-created. So there's been no one to keep in check, is perhaps a dismissive turn of phrase, more regulate things. And so it's been a little bit Wild West. And I think for then people who aren't involved, and I don't think Lawrence has tried to regulate, but I think for someone to come in who's not part of that sphere and say, well, actually, I think you should be doing it like this or like that, someone like Robbie's going to get offended and I think take it as them not respecting his craft.
Let me be perfectly clear. I think what I was saying was I do get insight. I do see how YouTube channels work. I have been on both sides of the camera on a fan channel, on many fan channels, and I have seen how those have worked. I shot, edited, and uploaded the first ever YouTube video for Ball Street and Beyond That. I've done many hours of editing and work on fan channels and fan channel content. And in my experience, and from the perspective I come from, I agree with Chris. I think it's unregulated. And I think it poses a threat to what most people hide behind as the idea of freedom of speech, which most people seem to think is just allowing people to say things. Mm. And at the same time, I think we are in an industry we're in England and we're in an industry where if you want to have any sort of informed debate, very often you're going to get shut down very quickly because that's not the way it works around here. You don't go to the football week in, week out. And if I'm completely honest, I thought Robbie was quite disrespectful in the way that he spoke about me. And I think he was quite dismissive of someone who asked perfectly legitimate questions. But if I'm honest,
there could have been a bonus podcast, a little debate, a nice discussion amongst us all.
Let's put it this way, Adam. It's not through lack of trying to speak publicly and privately with these people. What I got was a little bit sick of waiting for everyone to reply. And I got a little bit sick of being told by the same people over and over again, oh, let's not talk about that. Basically, because they see a cash cow. And it's the same as the KSI situation. And we know what happened with KSI in the end. So I'm not saying that what JJ is going through is terrible. What JJ is going through is, it's his own personal thing. But the point is with KSI in the end, he decided to self-regulate. We're sort of hoping that something similar happens on fans. Although
that's,
it would be
that's
very
part
unfair
of the problem, though, is that
with another, with, the rest of the time.
That's part of the problem listening to it, though, was actually to hear some of Robbie's riposte was to hear him say, well, tell me when Lawrence goes to all the Liverpool games. Like, that really matters. You can stack up how many games you've been to all you want, but it doesn't really make you right or wrong. And honestly, my only issue with Robbie is that when he frames the USP and the benefit of fan channels, he often does it against traditional media, and he proliferates a lot of ignorance towards traditional media, talks about journalists getting driven there by their cars and free tickets and all that. If I'm honest, it got under my bonnet a little bit, because this week ESPN just laid off a bunch of writers, some of who were friends of mine. And I think there's this sort of, I think Lawrence put it quite well, I can say whatever I want and no one's allowed to say anything because that's freedom of speech. It's really not. Everyone's entitled to response to what you say. You're just allowed the platform to have your opinion. And it applies very much, I think, to football media at this present stage, is a lot of people have confused what freedom of speech actually means.
As a great man once said, with great power comes great responsibility. You know who said that, Dave?
Yeah. Superman, Spider-Man.
Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben. From the rice advert.
The rice guy, yeah. That's the one.
You're a credit to your rice.
Moving on.
Can we just finish on? I genuinely would love to have a chat with Robbie. And generally, I think that most people would do better to listen to each other. Mm. I think the issue
is
that...
The olive branch.
That's the next step, though, realistically, because, I have a lot of love for the people at Ball Street. I text them fairly regularly, work with them in the past. But if you've got Robbie sitting in a room with people who work with him, it's just going to be an echo chamber. You need to sit down with different opinions in the same room instead of firing off an opinion, they fire off, and it just goes back and forth.
I think I had a lot of fundamental problems with the replies that I heard on that podcast. And I think... I think a lot of what was said about me was disingenuous on the podcast. I'll put it that way. I sound like I'm taking myself incredibly seriously, but what I do take seriously is people who talk about, who say, don't talk about me when you don't know, and then proceed to talk about other people when they don't know.
We've got to move on because people really don't like it when we talk about Arsenal Fan TV. And,
yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
It was a great question, though. You sent in the question. We just answered the question, you know?
I didn't send the question, Adam. That's not my second account.
We've got a great question here from Varun Joshi, friend of the podcast, long-time listener. He says, who is the coach of the year for you in the Premier League and also in Europe's top five leagues? He's gone for Conte and Jardine. Nico, come to you first. Give me a coach of the year in the Premier League and among Europe's other top five leagues.
Coach of the year in the Premier League, probably say it would be Conte. The way that he's been able to assess the culture of the Premier League, which is something that I think I've underestimated in the past. But speaking to different people with different viewpoints, I think some people have made some very interesting comments and introduced me to some a different aspect to it. And I think the approach that he took was measured and calculated and brilliant to really base his team around a point of defense and accentuate the qualities of his best players. And being able to do so well has only spoken to his credit as to how good of a manager he is. The second part of that was the best manager in Europe, was it?
Yeah, among the other top leagues in Europe, who's your top manager?
I think Maurizio Sarri has to be in there, though I don't appreciate what I believe were some fairly homophobic comments that he made earlier in the season. So, but the work that he's done there.
Clear, you're endorsing those comments?
No, right. Not at all.
We spoke about him. He's not pragmatic enough. That's his problem.
That's exactly what I was going to say, as well as long as the
I think
the
they like to be called LGBT now.
with the comments that he made, the work that he's done on the field there at Napoli has to be admired. I will toss Allegri in there. I think he's probably been one of the best managers in Europe this season. So I'll actually go with that. I'll go with Allegri.
Good shouts all around. Chris, who's
just to talk some actual football there instead of just the Lawrence McKenna podcast.
The snipes keep coming. Chris, who's your picks?
Nagelsmann, maybe, just because of the fact that it's kind of so early in his career, and he seems to have taken to it so well and adapted so well. In the Premier League, I think it's much of a muchness at this point. I think they're all very good. I've actually been quite impressed with a few Championship coaches that we've touched on. Jukanovic, Wagner, I think they've got Premier League potential in them. So yeah, probably they're the ones that stick out to me in the minute.
Dave, hit me.
Well, Adam, this could be like a 15-minute section.
I'm talking like 30
in terms
seconds.
Of number one, I think Yardim took a very big decision yesterday. Monaco were playing PSG in the Coupe de France semi-final, in fact. And basically what he did was he just went in the press conference was like, I'm just going to completely change this team. I'm going to play loads of youngsters to keep my lads fresh. Apparently Monaco, that was Monaco's 56th game of the season. They started in July in the Champions League third round qualifying. So for me, Yardim taking that step to push for the league and a title and the Champions League is very ballsy. He's a young manager, and that's, amongst everything else, the style of football, how far he's taken this group of young players. Yardim deserves it 100%. In terms of the Premier League, it's got to go to Big Sam Allardyce. Absolutely perfect.
Lawrence?
In terms of Premier League, let's go... wait, is there someone who's been innovative or just someone who's been good?
Just who is your coach of the year? Open to interpretation.
You know what? I'll steal your thunder. I'm going to go Pochettino.
God damn it. In Europe.
And Luis Enrique.
Oh, I love it.
Just for sheer bounce back ability.
Gotta go with Luis Enrique. What a manager. He's had a great season. I'm hard to disagree with Jardine for Monaco. Fantastic season, especially. If they make it through to the final, it'll be an incredible story. And then the Premier League's got to be Pochettino. Just wait for Chris to.
Do you want anything from the shop, Chris?
Chris, you're not on mute, mate.
Chris, try the kitchen.
Am I editing this out? Oh, just
crap.
It?
Was I unmuted there?
Yeah, try the kitchen, mate.
Try the kitchen, man.
Yeah, what a wanker living with other people.
Those motherfuckers. Mauricio Pochettino.
Zidane's a good shout.
Zidane, I think, you know what, you know, I've got that history.
Zidane is an excellent shout.
But what if, right, they lose the league title? Let's say, hypothetically, they lose the league title and get knocked out by Atletico in the semi-finals.
I don't know, mate. I think a lot of but a lot of people don't seem to see how difficult it is to manage at Real Madrid. I think managing and balancing all of that was shown. I mean, did it last season, but I mean, you know, tactically, then out on the pitch to be able to lose certain key figures of this squad, transition Ronaldo into not a relatively new position, but into a more central role, and consistently reshape the midfield is still quite impressive, and bring the best out of some of these players, let's be completely honest.
I think he's if I can just speak to that quickly, as Dave and I have spoken to before, I think he's the best manager both on and off the field for Real Madrid, in the sense that while someone like Benitez may have come in and made the correct tactical decisions and personnel decisions, you know, he came in and tried to really make the team about Gareth Bale because that's where he saw the future, which I think is the correct decision. He brought someone in like Casemiro to the team, a defensive midfielder that Real Madrid had been missing for a couple of years, where he, as he made those decisions, he didn't have necessarily a pedigree or outward perception both amongst the fans and with the rest of the board to make those decisions and have them stick. Whereas someone like Zidane can make those decisions and people respect him enough.
Benitez didn't have a pedigree, mate.
I'm not saying he didn't deservedly have it, but I'm saying, like, within the Spanish press were extremely disrespectful to someone like Benitez, given everything that he's done, like you've rightly said. And even the board.
Fucking pedigree. I'll show you pedigree, mate. You try taking a club up first season after they've gone down.
I've pissed Lawrence off.
Don't get him started on Benitez, for love of God.
Don't you fuck it, pedigree. You.
I'll tell you what, Rafa Benitez.
Let's move swiftly on, guys.
Pedigree. You won't be laughing next season when they get relegated.
Lot of questions to get for you guys. So I want to shift into quick fire gear to mix my metaphors somewhat. So I'm going to ask you a question each. I'm going to ask you a question each. So you've got to just, you know, answer.
Who the hell?
You've got to answer within 30 seconds. First up, Lawrence. To get you off of this Benitez rant. David D. Shanahan, 9:30, tweets in, thoughts on the new Liverpool kit. 30 seconds.
Certainly very pedigree. Certainly very pretty. It's a throwback, 125 years of Liverpool. It would have been very interesting considering... people are talking... It's the 125th year of Liverpool... Liverpool originally didn't start out in red like this. It would have been fascinating to see Liverpool turn out in the original kit that they played in 125 years ago. But this is a throwback to a number of different classic kits. Liverpool have only played in all red since the 60s. So it's a lovely kit. Classic collar doesn't suit me, but it will suit a lot of other people. Mm. And apparently it wraps the aging man very well. As we've seen on Redmen TV today.
Lovely. Moving swiftly on. Remember, quick answers. Gonzalo Golazzo, a fantastic Twitter name, says, should Monaco cash in on their stars and rebuild? Nico, I'm going to fire this one at you. 30 seconds.
No, I think if they can keep a lot of those core players that they've managed to develop recently, you know, that would be their best credit and their best ability to sort of continually keep themselves elevated, not only within Liga, but also, you know, within European competition. And I think, as Lawrence has spoken to before, there is that draw with sort of these newer money teams. And I think he even said, Monaco, that, you know, maybe you can't necessarily guarantee a title or trophies, but you can say, hey, you can come be part of this great squad. And I think if they can hold on to the likes of an Mbappe or Sidibe or Thomas Lemar, you know, you can get other great players to come in and add to your squad.
Mbappe is still a lovely name, isn't it? It's onomatopoeic.
Gushan says, Tottenham, best team, and Pochettino, best manager in England, but do any of them have any trophies? The answer is no. Let's see what happens at the end of the next season. You know, don't just judge a team's success. Don't judge a team's progress. The evolution. Exactly. Think about it, Dave. You'd love that site. You would love that site.
It would be beautiful.
Question for you, Dave. Ajdenan, 28. on Twitter says, thoughts on Martial's future with United. In my opinion, the most talented young player in the league, but I'm worried Mourinho doesn't rate him. Has he refound his trust in the Frenchman, Dave?
I think he has. The start against Burnley as a striker, the start this evening, I think he has found his trust. I think Martial was United's best attacker against City, and unfortunately United didn't get him the ball enough for him to run at Zabaleta, because he absolutely had Zabaleta's pants down his ankles. So I wouldn't be worried at all. I think with Zlatan going, you know, United shouldn't sign Zlatan on a new deal after the knee injury, unfortunately. So Martial and Rashford is United's future.
Great answer. Concise. I love it. Caspucci DM'd me specifically to ask on Instagram. I do have an Instagram, guys. Go and follow me if you want extremely average pictures. He said, if every player kept their youth products, which league would be the best, Chris? If every league kept their youth products, which league would be the best?
Are we when we say youth products,
interesting,
are you
question.
Saying the things that have come out of their academy, or are you talking about, so I if think England's got Sterling?
Yeah, I think that he's saying that, you know, did Cesc Fabregas, is he a youth product of England technically? Is he going that route?
Absolutely not. He's from Barcelona.
Is he basically saying which country produces the best footballers? Is that what he's saying?
I think he's saying if everyone wasn't allowed to move, if you had to stay at the club you joined at first, he was. Argentinians travel a lot, so I would say Spain, Argentina, they would be quite good.
France would be up there, you know? France would be up there.
End of. I think this one we can go around all of us very quickly with concise answers. Maybe 15 seconds. Thomas, yeah. Tom, he said, what's your favourite part of your job? And also, how would you recommend someone get into the same industry, your industry, whatever the industry may be, starting from scratch without a degree, etc.? Boy. Cheers, boys. Love you all. Kiss, kiss. Thanks, Thomas. You the man. Dave, why don't we start with you? What's your favourite part of your job, and how would you recommend someone get into the same industry? Very quickly.
Favourite part, probably sitting in my pants, doing work. You know, nobody can judge me.
What a way to live.
There's no haters in my room.
Pop a bollock out whilst you're...
And what was the second part of the question again, Dan?
How would you recommend someone who's starting from scratch, essentially, to get into your industry?
Watch bare football. Like, I mean, like every single day. The daily grind, hour after.
Football with bears, Dave.
Exactly.
Bear football. It's new. It's exciting. Go and check it out.
You say bear football, do you mean like football in?
I feel like we've got hung up on Dave's language there. Lawrence, what's the favourite part of your job, and how would you recommend someone gets into your industry?
Every Monday night and every Thursday night, Adam. How does someone get into my industry? Podcast. You don't necessarily need a degree anymore. I think you need experience. If you are young and you want experience in, you know, radio or TV, don't always think about going to London or Manchester. Go to a local place, you know, be that hospital radio, local TV. There's lots of community TV that's out there at the moment. Go and start and get your hands on the equipment. Start editing, start... you know, doing this stuff and getting experience on the ground, and, you know, start talking to people, because the sooner you do that, the more you will learn and the better you will get. And it just makes sense.
I'll echo everything you said, Lawrence. Favorite part of the job is doing, you know, what you love to do, following your passion. And as Lawrence is saying, I think getting experience, getting your foot in the door and actually getting some constructive sort of work time under your belt is very productive. Also, diversify your skills, you know. Don't just be good at one thing. Be good at multiple things. Make yourself, you know, make yourself so hireable that people can't help but get you involved, essentially. Same question to you, Chris.
Just echo what the lad said, really.
End of.
I will also say that, I mean, you know, if you want to work in online, then having a multiple skill set is very good. But at the same time, if you want to work in a big industry, and let's face it, you know, YouTube and online is going in a similar direction, there is a great need for people who have focused skills on production, coordination, all sorts of things. And so having that focused skill of having one thing, if you get into the right part of the industry, can be an incredible asset to you because you can make yourself almost indispensable to certain companies.
I've bemoaned that, you know, there's a lack of specialization, but at the same time, a lot of employers will be like, oh, can you edit that? Can you film that? Can you Photoshop that? Can you do that? You're expected to do everything. And if you can't, I think especially at the start, maybe you potentially limit yourself slightly. But, you know, just an opinion. Nick, what are you saying?
Yeah, I think maybe Chris will echo this as well. You know, sometimes you get a really inspired idea in terms of your writing, and it's just really fun to flesh out and evolve that idea as you go and go down sort of the creative process. So I think that's probably one of the best and most fun things that you can do really as a writer. It's great.
Mm. Do like Nico did and literally just message people and say, can I come on your podcast, and beg until the point where we then end up inviting you back.
Is that what I did, Lawrence?
And here we all are. The rest is and history. Here we are.
Yeah.
Dave, this question... Dave, I've got a great question for you. Really important question. From Virginia Blues. He says... It's actually not a question. It's more of an observation. Listening to Dave trying to get out of losing a bet. Laughable, he says. You were wrong, mate. Get yourself to the salon.
Have I lost a bet yet, Adam?
I mean, it's not looking good, Dave. Zlatan reportedly out for 8 months. The people have had their say as well on Twitter. We put the poll out there. What happens to the bet now? Is it void? Is it double or nothing? Does Dave go blonde? The final results, after 2,000 votes, 58% vote in Statman goes bleach blonde, Dave. The bet's over.
I wouldn't say so. Are the bookies paying out yet? I don't think so. Man United have got some horse placenta. They are using it on Zlatan knee right now, and he's going to return.
He's going to be up. Fucking
what king. Exactly?
Last game of the season. Hat-trick. Sorted.
What would they... What
did
exactly?
You say horse placenta?
Could you imagine? Could you imagine if he resurrects himself almost to score a hat-trick on the final day of the season? Okay. So it's going down to the wire, you're essentially saying. You're still holding out hope that Zlatan's going to come back from what is potentially a 9-month layoff in the space of about 4 weeks.
If it took me like 13 months to recover from an ACL injury, he's a professional player. That's easy, like 2 weeks.
Yeah, easy. No, you're right. We'll see what happens then. We shall see what happens. Gary Goals says, who has the better defence, Juventus or Atletico? What do you reckon, Nico? Potential finalists in this year's Champions League?
I would probably say Juventus. I think Atletico this season, if we're talking about overall, the past couple of years, I think Atletico edge it probably. But Atletico have gone out this season under Diego Simeone and tried to be a little bit more narrow so as to further their attacking efficacy, I guess, and hasn't really worked out for them. And I think on top of the fact that they have some elite defenders, Juventus excel in game management, as I wrote about. So I think the best defense in Europe is probably Juventus.
Next question is from Kenny J. Ribolo. Decent name. Would you ever consider having fans call in to ask a question live? Sort of like Football Republic used to do in their UCL live streams.
That was such a good time in our lives, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Such fun.
God. Yeah.
What do you reckon, Lawrence? Would you get people to call into a show again? I used to enjoy that when we did that on TFR. You know, way back when we would get people to phone in. It was great to, you know, talk to the audience, talk to the guys out there.
If only we had any of the people who originally worked at the Football Republic and made it the channel it was.
Don't know where they're
going. Sure. You know what? I actually would enjoy to do a show like that. I was talking about this weirdly with Kelly Cates from 606. Wonderful. And she said, what a great show that would be. And I said, yes, Kelly, it would.
Yeah, we already do that. Maybe we could do it in the future. When we get like a, you know, when we're rich and famous from this very podcast, it may take a while. We'll get ourselves a studio, you know, live phone-in shows. Oh, for the new generation, it could be.
It's not hard to sort of to even just. I mean, have you ever seen what's that one that the poet does where he holds up the iPad? The other one. The one where he sort of, you know, he's got like Leon Knight or whoever on the iPad.
Production values, then.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Kenny. Maybe one day we'll see, we'll think about maybe bringing that in. I think that'd be nice. I'd like to speak to the guys out there. It'd be nice.
Surely someone could send it in as a Twitter clip or as a Snapchat or something. We did that once as a pilot for a company.
Too old
but...
for Snapchat. But... Too old for Snapchat. Dave, you're probably young enough for Snapchat. Do you use Snapchat?
Yeah,
Nico's young enough for Snapchat. These young.
Dave Snapchat's way too much. He Snapchat's his. Pretty much his entire life. It's kind of disturbing.
It's usually in my pants as well. Sometimes it's
a bit cockamollocks.
Ollie, interesting question from at OllieShep97 about the question a few pods ago about football in 100 years. Where do you see esports going? Is it just a phase or will it continue to grow? I think this is serious business. There's serious money behind this, guys. You've seen how EA Sports have revolutionized FIFA this year with the Foot Champions Leagues on the weekend.
It took them so long to do that, Jesus.
it was a no-brainer almost, but they've got everything in place now. The infrastructure is there to sort of take esports to the next level. When you've got the biggest company in football, in gaming behind it, I think that's a sign that it is going to continue to grow. And we spoke about it on that very podcast. You know, the future of esports is you're sitting at home controlling the players. You know, you've got your VR headsets on. Let's see, when we're all dead and gone, that'll be football. Moving on, Oshkari Kajava said, apart from the MLS specialist, Kristen, what are your perceptions of MLS? So no Kristen on this question. Dave, what's your perception? In a very quick, concise answer of MLS.
They need to bring in academies and bin the draft.
Great stuff. Lawrence.
A really great American league. I like the idea of pro rel over there, not to get too much into this. But at the same time, I have enjoyed the closed league system that they've had so far, and I hope that they keep some of the regulation that they've had in and maybe try and maintain some of the ideas of fairness that they originally set the league up around, which may seem to have gotten lost in some of the politicking.
Nico, what do you reckon?
I think it's a fun league to watch. It's a fun league to go watch locally, especially since Orlando City's new stadium is fantastic. I think it's got a big future, and I'm excited to see what it can do for itself, not only for, you know, the perception of American soccer, but as well the national team.
I think it's great fun. Went to an Atlanta United game when I was in America. You know, let's do a name drop. I was there with Spencer. We met Carlos Bocanegra. He was a nice guy. Darren Eales as well, the president of the club. I was very impressed by what they're trying to do, seeing their training ground, seeing the new stadium they're building. I think it was clear the ambitions and sort of the investment and everything that's going into making this club a success. And actually going to the game, very different to an English game, very sort of family friendly, a lot of sort of children and women there, which I thought was great to see. Different sort of atmosphere, but nonetheless a fantastic atmosphere. And I think, you know, it's different to the English game, but not to its detriment. You know, it's got its own qualities. So I think it's very enjoyable. I'm excited to see how it develops in the future. Next question. Not a question, more of an observation. Prude V says, I have a weird cup idea. One club from each league who spent most in the window will involve in a tournament, the winner gets a small cup of tea. Not really sure what to make of that one. An interesting idea.
It's surreal.
Yeah, very surreal. Dave, this one's for you. From, interestingly enough, Jay for Tea, his name is. Slaven Bilic, do you think he deserves more criticism this season? Tactics, substitutions, and squad fitness have been poor all season. They have sort of gone under the radar in the last few weeks, you know, probably safe now with Swansea and Sunderland being dragged down. What do you reckon, Dave? Should your favourite manager, Slaven Bilic, have got more pelters for this season?
Yeah, he should have got more pelters when he got the job, because if anyone had looked into his previous, they realised that he starts well and it goes downhill from there. And that's where it appears it's going right now. And yeah, West Ham need to move on from Slaven Bilic as quick as they can.
I like it. Here's a great question that I can't answer. John Shin, the man to blame for Dave's bleach blonde hair, essentially. If you could sign one player from Spurs to your side, who would it be and why? sorry at Adam Boltwood, crying laughing emoji. Currently, Spurs are a joy to watch. You're not wrong, John. Lawrence, which Spurs player would you like to see Liverpool sign in a hypothetical fantasy world?
Dele Alli.
Oh, great choice.
Liverpool could have signed him a few years ago, but they thought he wouldn't amount to much.
Oh, right, yeah. Dave, who would you pick? Not Dele Alli.
Hurricane Harry.
Oh, what a player. He is sensational. You'd like to see him leading the line for Manchester United? You think he'd slot right in?
Yeah, I think that'd be perfect.
Chris, who do you want to see pitching up at St. James Park?
Could take anyone really.
You can't take Harry Kane or Dele Alli. That's
the game. Moussa Dembélé.
Player. Nico.
If I'm being realistic within this fantasy world, I'm saying Kevin Vimmer. If I'm being fantastical, I'm saying Toby Alderweireld.
Right, Kevin Vimmer. Yeah. Wow.
He's fantastic. He would fit right into the back three that Pep Guardiola wants to play.
Mate, he's yours. He's all yours, in my opinion.
Mainly, you don't like him? Better than any of the centre-backs.
No.
Yeah. How are those Liverpool centre-backs, Lawrence? How are they doing?
Fine,
this
mate.
Are they doing good? I'm just wondering like how
next
they're doing.
Next question.
Is this how you write all your shit articles?
Next question, guys. The sniping on this podcast. This is for everyone. Gibbs at Ryan Gibson 1995 said, who is your favourite player from your rival club? Sunderland are shit in Chris's case, so we will say Brighton, crying, laughing, emoji, face. Chris, which Brighton player would you take at Newcastle?
Lewis Dunk. Mm. Okay. I really think they're a very average bunch of individuals.
For me, it's obvious. It's Alexis Sanchez. Absolute no-brainer. Lawrence, who would you take from Manchester United, I guess?
Oh, Manchester, that's an interesting one. I would love to see Zlatan at Liverpool.
To be fair, you know, I phrased it wrong. He's saying favourite player, so, you know. Who's your favourite Manchester United player?
Then...
Who'd you love?
David De Gea.
Really? Yeah.
David De Gea. Yeah,
he's your favourite Manchester.
I mean, what? Yeah, I mean, look at him. That hair, jeez, man.
Nico.
Henrik Mkhitaryan or Daily Blind.
Mm, interesting choices. Dave.
No, your rivals, Nico.
Dave, I guess you've got a choice of Man City or Liverpool.
Yes. Deja Lovren's pretty funny. Always gets seven eyes and then once off falls off the cliff again.
Yeah. Good choice. Very good choice. Final question is from Justin Thunder. Lager. Maybe Lager, which would be a fantastic
wrestling reference, I think.
Oh, man. I went to see wrestling last week, just, you know, so I should probably know that. That's that thing. Anyway, he says, The Wire or The Sopranos? What do you prefer? Great question. The answer, for me personally, is The Sopranos. What a great show. Sensational. Lawrence, got a preference there? What's your favourite TV show of all time? Really?
Yeah, I agree.
Sopranos, you're going for Sopranos?
The Sopranos is excellent.
Sopranos is excellent. Breaking Bad's the best TV show.
The Wire was fantastic, though. So,
yeah, it's good. Very good show.
No. No.
What?
Silly.
What?
The Breaking Bad is not the best TV show of all time.
I think it is, yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
All time.
I think Breaking Bad is number one, yes. I think Sopranos...
The best drama. The best drama.
Was the best thing I've ever watched.
Are you joking?
I think you're negatively viewing Breaking Bad because maybe shows like The Wire, maybe The Sopranos, like deeper character studies. There's lots of very interesting sort of social commentary in there. Breaking Bad,
Dave
not so
said
much.
Lost.
No, you didn't, did you? Dave,
what's the problem?
Did you say Lost, mate?
What do you mean? I enjoyed Lost from
Let me
start
tell
to finish.
Lost is
one of the first. It was one of the first
show.
Ones that was like a movie every episode.
The only thing about Lost is that last season really let it down. It was superb up until that point.
Yeah, that was the only thing.
Why? What was wrong with the ending? It was a happy ending.
Yeah, it was a joke.
What?
bit of beauty.
They couldn't wrap it up, Dave. They couldn't tie up all those loose ends.
They wrapped it up, Adam. It was all about the viewer and what the viewer, you know, decided the end was.
Are you being contrary right now? Are you trying to wind me up? Right, let's move on. Chris, what's your favourite out of The Wire and Sopranos? And what's your favourite TV show of all time?
I've never seen either The Wire or The Sopranos.
Doubt.
Good God, man. What's your favourite TV show of all time in that case?
The Newsroom, probably.
Yeah, interesting choice. That is a very interesting choice. Nico,
yeah.
Breaking Bad? No. Wire or Sopranos? Or what's your favourite TV show of all time?
I like The Sopranos. I'd also say Breaking Bad's pretty good. I like it a lot, so I don't know what Lawrence's problem with it is.
I don't have a problem with it. Nico, I'm probably in the same camp as you, right? Sex and the City.
Yeah, love that one.
Them girls. Guys, wow.
That's such a Samantha thing to say.
A podcast. Until next week, until Monday, when we'll be reviewing Tottenham's superb win over Arsenal in the North London Derby. Lance, where can we find you?
Got some balls on you, haven't you, mate? Probably watching The Sopranos back.
Fantastic show.
Twitter. Let us know your favourite series and we might watch them together as a group and comment on them.
Interesting proposition. Dave, where can people find you?
The internet.
Oh, the internet. It's a magical place. Chris, can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, but don't search for it.
And definitely don't search for John Terry's mum. Nico,
is that true? Or was that put,
no,
was
it's
that
not
turned
true.
Out it wasn't
it's fake, it's all fake. But it was great fun all the same. Nico, thank you so much. Special guest tonight, super sub himself. Where can the people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at @Nico_O'Morales. Read my articles if you want. Lawrence says they're shit, but I think they're pretty good.
I tweeted one the other day.
Oh, dear.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Great
more
stuff.
Charity than enjoyment.
Guys, hope you've enjoyed this podcast. The sniping, the fun, the games we've all enjoyed. We'll see you on Monday.